Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening in on Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. Tonight's scripture reading is, we're going to continue on the Sermon on the Mount. Last week we read Matthew chapter 5. This week it'll be Matthew chapter 6, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 6. Take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them, otherwise ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret. And thy Father, which seeth in secret, himself shall reward thee openly. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father, which is in secret. And thy Father, which seeth in secret, shall reward thee openly. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him. After this manner therefore pray ye: Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. For if ye forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father, which seeth in secret, shall reward thee openly. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness! No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Wherefore, if God so clothe the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you? O ye of little faith! Therefore take no thought, saying, What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight? Is your mic working? I see your mic is open. Don't know if you're talking. I know you've been having problems with that.
I can talk to Terry. Can Terry tell you?
Johnny said he had no questions for tonight.
Okay. All right. The queue is open. Let me see if there's anybody in the queue yet. We've got one person in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone. And there should be a button if there's an app or a browser there. Okay, I want to cover a couple of things. I've had a couple of emails. I've seen that people talking about the affidavits to be attached to the grand jury's presentment going up to the United States Supreme Court. At least we're going to try to get there. I do believe that the administration, they're saying a lot of things, or have been, especially Trump and others, have been saying a lot of things concerning the courts and the problems in the courts. They know the evil of the courts. We do know that they're reading our papers that we've been sending to them. We've sent a couple of presentments to the president, which, of course, we copied all of his administration. Also send them a copy of the book, at least I think it was 42 people. The book that we had sent was Government by Consent. And I just recently received a thank you note from the White House concerning that gift. And again, from listening a little bit here and a little bit there, it does sound like they do understand the problem. But we'll see what happens. We're definitely going to need the administration behind us concerning what we're trying to do here. We've tried to send a presentment to the United States Supreme Court on two occasions already. The doorkeeper, as we mentioned before, stops it from entering in. And last time they said we had to go through the court system to get into this. But, of course, this was a presentment, number one. A presentment to the United States Supreme Court obviously doesn't need to go through any court system. The other thing is, of course, there is an access directly to the Supreme Court on issues that the lower courts cannot deal with. And so there is a process to do that. We did exercise the knowledge of that process on our second round to try to get our paperwork in. But again, they had sent it back. I think what we're going to try to do now is we're going to try one more time to send it through that way. They have been quick to return it within a week, so we'll get back within a week if they're going to reject it. I think a cover letter explaining our position might be something that might be helpful. And also the threat, maybe that's not a good word, but maybe it is a good word. Maybe the promise of an indictment for anybody that interferes to prevent this paper, which is a presentment from the grand jury, to reach the United States Supreme Court. And that would be found by the person who signs for it. And then, of course, anybody else along that line. So I think that has to be what we have to really give them, a promise that this is what we're going to do, a promise of an indictment. But tonight I want to really go through quickly, because we had a lot of questions, or a couple of questions anyway, concerning the affidavits. There's been some confusion. Some of it, of course, might be on my side, that I might not have put all the information out there quick enough. I'd mentioned that I was going to put some instructions out, and I just put some instructions out this week, or this past week, and I just want to go through it real quickly. So anybody that's not familiar with what we're doing here, on the front page of a website, you can come down just a little bit, and you'll see grand jury presentment to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we did a video, I think it's a 20-minute video, which we did play live online here, and it is posted up on YouTube and on Rumble. Anybody who hasn't seen that video, in order to understand what we're doing and what we're bringing before the United States Supreme Court, which ultimately is the abrogation of the law. They've abrogated the law. They've abrogated the Constitution. They've abrogated the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. They've taken away our courts of justice. They've denied our king of the court, which of course is God, and the law, which of course, ultimately, you know, well, God said he wrote the law, his laws in the hearts of men, and that's why we have a jury. People can tell when a wrongdoing was done. They live in the same world, particularly in the same county, because that's where they need to be chosen from. They understand what needs to be done to fix and repair a problem, if it can honestly be brought before them. And that is the other problem. They taint every single jury. Every jury is stacked, from the federal district courts all the way down to the village court, if they give you one in a village court. And they'll give you 6 people there, which is not what is required by common law. 12 is the requirement, and that comes from the Bible. You know, there were 12 witnesses, and it's exactly what we need in our court, 12 witnesses. So anybody who hasn't seen this video, you should watch the video, and then you'll understand. Now, people who have court cases, no matter how old they are, you know, you've been in chancery courts, which is not a court of law. You've been denied due process, and that's the key, the denial of due process. And so we're receiving affidavits of any people that have a case that we can attach the affidavit concerning that case to our paperwork. We have quite a few cases that we have covered over the years, building up evidence of conspiracy against due process. Hundreds of cases, and they will be attached and going out to the Supreme Court with our paperwork as evidence to prove the conspiracy. Because no matter what they do in a federal court out there in the state of Washington or California or Pennsylvania or New York or New Hampshire or Texas or Montana, it doesn't matter where you're at. Every single federal court operates in the same fashion, denial of due process. And every single court, from the federal courts all the way down to the village courts, deny due process, because they operate under civil law. And that's not who we are as a people. We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for them to be obedient to. We are the sovereign. We wrote the law that is supposed to guide them, that they're supposed to be obedient to. We laid out their authorities and their powers, and they've abused it to the umpteenth power. And that's not only the Supreme Court that has done that. Congress is, I don't even know which is worse. I can't figure out which is worse, which is more evil, Congress or the courts. Because there is a connection between the two, because first of all, they do a lot of evil. They do things that they're not supposed to do. We've given them 18 powers. They've taken 118 powers. And they continue to take more. And they bargain with our unalienable rights. For as long as I can remember, they've been arguing the First Amendment and the Second Amendment. These people just don't stop. They have no power, no authority to make any argument or any discussion on anything in the Bill of Rights or the restrictions that we've put upon them within the Constitution, or the law that we, the people, decided to live under, which is the law of nature and of nature's God. That's what we, the people, defined. And the only law that they can write is the law to govern themselves and the law to govern commercial activities. That's the purpose of equity. Equity is legislative law for the under common law, by the rules of common law, all of which was in place until 1938. By the rules, you know, they robbed us by Congress bringing together the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And in 1938, the United States Supreme Court committed the biggest act of treason ever within our nation, because they abrogated the Constitution by abrogating the law of the land and replacing it with civil law. Everything's a facade. People think that they can get justice in the courts. It doesn't. You don't get it there. They think that they may get a jury of their peers. Well, those are people who have never been in the courts. They believe that. Anybody that's been in the courts, they know the problem, because they've experienced the problem, the pain, the suffering, the assault. They deny evidence. They deny justice. And we're in chancery courts. That's where we're at. One individual that gets up there and makes all the decisions. And it's all about the status quo. It's an evil system that needs to be taken down and replaced with what we, the people, originally set forth. So anyway, anybody who has an affidavit concerning a court case, would like to attach that to our case, you're going to send it. I'm going to give you some information right now on that, and then we'll open up for questions. So on here, we get an example of the affidavit to be attached. There's been some confusion on this. Now, let me open it up. But I'm going to be a little bit blunt. If you don't know how to write an affidavit and you don't understand this, then you really don't understand due process, and you don't understand how the system works. And if you're going to resurrect your case, which is what we're trying to do, is resurrect all these cases, because no one has ever been heard in a court of law. We're not old enough to ever have been heard in a court of law. Because, again, this has been gone. This has been gone since 1938. So anybody that's still alive from back in those years, you were a child back then. But anyway, basically, I'm just going to go through this very quickly. And again, if you don't understand due process and you have a problem just writing an affidavit, and you have a case in the court, and you're trying to take it through the system yourself without a lawyer, which I wouldn't use a lawyer other than for advice. That's about it. My advice that I'd want to get off to them is how the system works, particularly. Okay, but there are other things you can use them for to understand the system. But I definitely would never permit any kind of a bar attorney representing me, because they owe their allegiance first to the court. And I don't know if they ever owed their allegiance to their client. What they're concerned about with their client is the signature on a check. That's been my experience, and I've been involved with this for quite a few years now, maybe 15 years or something of that nature. and that's what I see. I've been with lawyers when I'm having a conversation on my case, and they answer their phone, and they kick back and start talking to other individuals. I mean, what is this? I mean, this is what they think about us. They're just piling case on top of case so they can get check on top of check. And bar attorneys have been taught the lie. They're true believers. They're the minions of the New World Order. They maintain this process that is destroying our republic. They don't know that we're a republic. They think we're a democracy. They have no clue on the difference between the two. And they're just destructive to who we are as a people. So anyway, If you want to attach an affidavit, it's got to be a one-pager. Can't do two pages. We don't need a lot of information on this. We just need the basic information. The key thing is the fact in this affidavit, you want to write the fact that ultimately they've denied you of certain unalienable rights. The main one is the right to due process. Because I don't know anybody, I have never met anybody that has ever went into a court and got due process. Never have met one person. And I have many cases myself, and I've never gotten due process. Because they robbed us of that due process. They've thrown that off. And by the way, civil law is a denial of due process in itself. And the fact that they are chancery courts is a denial of due process. And the fact that they stack the juries is a denial of due process. So in writing your affidavit, you have to understand that. And again, it's going to be up to the individual to argue their case that becomes resurrected, hopefully by the work that we're doing here, to resurrect all the cases. I've got lots of cases to be resurrected. And anybody who would like to put their affidavit in here for that purpose, well, we can use it too. Okay, so basically, you know, an affidavit starts with your name. And I'm going to read a couple of these sentences maybe. You know, I, your name, affiant, obviously you put your name in there, wherever the red is, you got to put your information. Affiant being of lawful age, qualified and competent to testify to having first-hand knowledge of the following facts, to hereby swear that the following facts are true, correct, and not misleading. And of course, anything you put here needs to be true. You want to put your case number, the name of the court, the address of the court. You want to make the note whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. You want to put the date that the case was filed and the county that the case is in. You want to put the plaintiffs and the defendants. You might be either one or the other. You want to put the case disposition in less than four sentences. One to four sentences. You want to make the point on the types of cases. You know, was this a non-judicial foreclosure case? Was this a habeas corpus case? Was this any kind of a federal, state, county, city, town, village court case that denied due process? Keep it short, no storytelling. Remember, this less is more. Just the facts concerning the denial of due process. The federal court is all about constitutional violations. It's not interested in the case itself. It's interested in the fact that you've been denied due process. That's the key. And if you went, it doesn't matter whatever court you went into, you have been denied due process just by the fact that you've been under civil law and that they are operating under chancery courts, and these are chancellors. They're not magistrate judges. They're chancellors. And they're not magistrates particularly, because a judge in itself cannot sit in a court of law. Only a magistrate can sit in a court of law. A sheriff can do it, a coroner can do it, and a magistrate can do it. I'm sure there's a few other officers that could probably do it, but judges cannot. But all judges are magistrates, so therefore they can sit in a court of law, but they must put on their hat for as a magistrate. And they don't get to act as a judge. They don't get the right, and I don't want to say right, because they have no rights. They don't get the authority. They don't have the authority that we, the people, gave to them. They do not have the authority because we, the people, did not give them the authority to make any summary judgments. Common law does not permit summary judgments. The only summary judgment potentially possible is in the very beginning of a case where it is so clear that that case is going to be lost by the other side, a summary judgment can be made. But if the other side is not happy with that summary judgment, denies it, they still have to have their day. And then they still get their jury trial. Okay, so type of case, you know, we want to know. Case disposition. Now, and I'm going to go a little bit more deeper on this in the instructions, but I put notes here. You've got to read the Fourth Amendment. And if your rights were violated, with a simple sentence or two describing the violation. Read the Fifth and the Seventh Amendment state that you were denied the process in due court, in a court of common law, because you were in a chancery court. And you probably, we should change that and put natural law, because they play games with common law, the term. But if they go into Black's law, or you go into Bouvier's law, it's clear what common law is. It is a natural law. So also known as natural law, by a free and independent jury of your peers. In criminal cases, state if you were not indicted. If you were not indicted, the whole case needs to be thrown out by a grand jury. If you're the defendant and it's a criminal case, in violation of your Amendment 5 right. Read the 8th Amendment, and if your rights were violated, write a simple sentence or two describing the violation. Note if you were denied filing a writ of error or habeas corpus. Write a simple sentence or two describing the violation. You just have to make the statement of what you've been denied. You don't have to get long-winded on any of this. Note if you were pressured to take a plea, or you will receive a long jail sentence. Write a simple sentence or two describing the violation. Claim the damages and the restitution being sought. Mail this one-page affidavit, one page, not two pages, not three, one page. mail that, and again, we're not looking for the story of the case. That's your case is one thing. It's covered when you put down the case number, all that information is available. But the point is really here is just that we're using this to help resurrect our case for everyone, ultimately resurrect your case. Federal courts cannot hear the details of a case anyway, only the violation of the Constitution. Now, you may have been charged in a federal court, by civil law, but that in itself is a denial of due process, because statutes is a denial of due process. You mail that one-page affidavit with a donation to National Liberty Alliance, NLA, at 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. Okay, now obviously you're going to delete all the red information and you're going to fill it in with your information. Then you get it notarized. You sign it in front of a notary. You should get two copies. Send us a copy, and you should retain a copy yourself. Okay, the next thing people need to look at here is instruction specific. Okay, click on the instruction tabs and you're going to get this paper, and I'm going to go through this as quick as I can. Instructions, again, mail one-page affidavit with a donation to National Liberty Alliance. Important note, if you don't know due process, you will need to take, if you don't know due process, if you don't understand due process, and if you don't know how to write an affidavit, and you got a court case going, and you think you're going to represent yourself, you're going to lose. No matter, even if you get a court of law, you're going to lose. You need to understand those things. And so if you don't understand those things, you need to take our course. And there's a link here to take our course. There's also a link on our front page to take our course. As a matter of fact, I think there's a link right above what we're looking at, for instance, on National Liberty Alliance, right here. Affordable Court Access and a Common Law Course. You can click here and sign up for the 90-hour law course. And this is all about due process, how the court system works, how the forms, different systems, strategies, state of mind that you need to have, different tools you need to know and understand. I don't think anyone can be good at this without at least 6 months working on a course. I mean, you can go through the course rather quickly, but you got to be focused on it, do a lot of homework on it, and work on it. And the more time you put in, the better you can be. And again, one of the things that everyone has to learn is how to write. And you learn how to write by reading other cases. I've read a lot of, Supreme Court cases and decisions particularly. I don't necessarily read the cases, but I read the decisions because it gives you an appreciation how to really write. The facts of the case is unique to the case, and you know what the facts are, and you want to write it as clear as you can, in your own court case, of course. And when you finish writing it, you set it aside, and maybe the next day you come and read through it, and you massage it. You're going to change words. You're going to look up other words. You're going to, you know, keep massaging that case and massaging that case. You're going to want to use, when you do your memorandums of law, you're going to use lots and lots and lots of footnotes. You want to prove every fact that you put into your case, especially in the law, but also on the facts of whatever the case is about. So anyway, people need to take the course if they don't understand what we're talking about. If they don't understand these things, and you don't understand due process, you know. Okay, so under the heading, list the following that applies: the jurisdiction of the court, usually chancery under civil law. That's where you are. You got to go look that up and figure. If you're in traffic court, then you have to make that note. Okay. And whatever the jurisdiction of that court was, I don't know that I'd get too much into being a traffic court case. It's still definitely a chancery court that's statutory. It's under civil law, which has nothing to do with we the people, nothing at all. So you want to make that point, that it is a chancery under civil law. That's the key. So I wouldn't get, again, if it's a traffic case, you don't want to put traffic in here. Okay, your case disposition, 1-4 sentence, clearly list the right violation, stating the proper amended violated. Were you denied the right of habeas corpus or writ of error? Some of this stuff, of course, is already on the affidavit as far as information. Were you pressured to take a plea? Or you'd be getting a long jail sentence. That's unlawful. That's unlawful. Keep it short. No storyteller. Remember, less is more than just the facts. So let's look at Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by an oath or affirmation. The warrant without an oath or affirmation is not lawful. It's not a true warrant. And it must say particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. If all those things are not in there, then it's unlawful. It's an unlawful warrant. And you can make that point very clear in your court case. Was there searches and seizures? And this is just particularly, you know, kind of a questions concerning the Amendment 4. Was there searches and seizures without a warrant supported by oath, affirmation, and description describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized? Amendment 5. And you can... You could probably extract more things out of this if it fits your case in all of these amendments. And then Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Now, an infamous crime is not the crime in itself that makes it infamous. It is the sentence, a jail sentence, that makes it infamous. That's what law dictionaries say. Black's Law says it, Brovier says it. And that's important to realize, because when you're in the lower courts, when you're in anything under a county court, maybe even a county court too, but you know, your town courts, your village courts, and so on, they claim that this means that the jail sentence is more than a year. So therefore, they can give you a sentence of a year in jail without a grand jury. On things that were taken by a warrant that were not lawful, without a trial jury. And if they give you a trial jury, they give you 6 people usually instead of 12. That's unlawful also. So no person shall be to answer a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of grand jury, except in the cases arising on land or naval forces or in the militia, and when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against themselves. You know, twice in jeopardy, I have seen cases where the judge has thrown out the jury decision and a new trial was made. That's double jeopardy. People don't realize this, and lawyers don't raise it. You can't be compelled to be a witness against yourself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. That's in a court of law, by a jury of your peers, not a judge making some decisions, not a judge deciding what evidence is going to be accepted into this case or not. And believe me, they clean out a lot of evidence to prevent it from coming into the court so that the case could be won according to the status quo. Nor shall property be taken for public use without just compensation. Okay, if it's a criminal case, the question is, and you want to make it on your point, on your paperwork, was there a grand jury indictment if it's criminal? Was there a free and independent trial, a trial by jury? I can assure you that that didn't happen. Go into the federal courts, read the papers. There's a questionnaire for jurors, and you go read that, and you'll see how they stack juries. They want to know from you what news station you even listen to. If you have a weapon in your home, do you have a permit to carry a weapon? Is there anybody in your family that has weapons? They ask you all kinds of personal questions because they're doing a psych on you and they're trying to figure out where they can fit you so that they can get what they want at the end of the day. They're going to find out whether you're liberal or conservative, and they'll use that in a case in order to get the end results that they want. That's stacking a jury. Was there a free and independent trial jury? What a double jeopardy. Was there double jeopardy? Were you deprived of liberty or property without that due process of law? And the answer is yes. In every single case, you've been deprived that because you've been under civil law and not the law of the land, which they abrogated. Amendment 6. In the criminal prosecutions, the accuser shall enjoy the right of a speedy and public trial. Now that's a real joke on that one. By an impartial jury. Again, what a problem that is. In the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. And that's what discovery is all about. The right to answer and question all the things you need to know on what's going on the other side. And they need to give you all of the evidence against you. All of it. They can't withhold anything. Anything they withhold at the end of the day is not permitted in the case at all. And if they're withholding evidence that would prove your innocence, well, you got to ask for that too and make sure. Because then that becomes a criminal act that they are performing if they're withholding evidence that could free you, can prove your innocence. Let's see where we're at. I think I read all of 6 here. Be confronted witness, yeah, favored assistant. Okay. Also to have compulsory process for obtaining a witnesses in your own favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. You do not have to have a lawyer. You can have assistance of counsel. And I would take, if you're in a criminal case, I definitely would take assistance of counsel. That means you have a lawyer sitting next to you you can talk to get better understanding of what's going on around you. Okay? You don't need to let him talk. You don't need to let him write the papers. I mean, the judge is going to have a conniption. It's the right of counsel, not the right of a bar attorney to represent you. Did the judge deny any evidence or witness on your behalf? Did you get assistance of counsel under your control and not the judge's control? Amendment 7. In suits of common law where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of jury by trial shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Not their rules, the rules of common law. Were you denied a trial by jury orientated in the common law? And of course you have been. I've never heard of any jury being orientated in the common law. If you appealed, was the process under the common law? Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. Were there excessive bails or fines imposed? So, you want to make that point. Were cruel and unusual punishment inflicted? And that happens a whole bunch of times. When you go up against that status quo, you go up against these institutions, boy, they get really angry. Who do you think you are to come up against us? And they're going to abuse you. You know, there's all kinds of things they do. Okay? That's what's called, one thing they do is what's called the diesel therapy. They'll put you in the back of a vehicle, chain you up, and ride you around for 8-10 hours, bring you someplace to sleep maybe even chaining you to the floor, and we know of people that this happened to where you couldn't even reach the toilet, okay? And then the next day they put you back in the vehicle and they'll drive you around some more. And this could go on for months, and it drives you crazy. Put you in solitary confinement. Now they have this big thing of covert, and I don't know if they still have it, but everybody's got to go into this situation where they prevent anybody else to be around you. And they use that as an excuse. And many, many other things. Leaving you in a cell, a cold cell without a blanket. Okay? That's a big one all the time. And there's a lot of other things. I mean, if anybody looks into the Hammond case, we do have that case. We've done affidavits on that case. You can find that on our website. And we have the information on the case. We've done some indictments concerning that case. And Lavoie Finnegan's case, we have that case. And we've had some indictments on that one. And you'll get a lot of information concerning these kind of things and the evil things that these people do. It's a big mess, and we need to fix it. And only the people can fix it, and that's what we're trying to do. We need the people behind this. We need this to go viral, this information. We need the video to go viral. If the video goes viral, it'll lead a lot of people to us here at National Liberty Alliance. It'll lead a lot of people maybe that'll want to attach affidavits to our case and support us financially, because it's going to cost money, okay? And I'm not a rich guy. I live off Social Security myself. I'm retired. We do have a couple of people who have been really helpful. But we do need a lot more money going through this case. We have enough to get started. We don't have enough to finish it. If we can get into the federal, if we can get it in through a presentment directly, that's why we're going to try one more time. Try one more time to get it directly to the Supreme Court without going through the trial process, because it's not necessary. And we can make two cases on that why it's not necessary. And if they were to try to debate it and argue it, they would lose, if anybody's being honest, because it's just the law. And if we can't get it in that way, then we will immediately return it to going through the trial courts. That could take 6 months to get to the doors of the Supreme Court. Then once you get to the doors of the Supreme Court, then it takes more time. Okay, in order for it to be heard. And again, it's coming in as a presentment. And I got to believe at some point the The clerks of the Supreme Court justices will review the cases and realize this is a presentment. It's not a trial case. It's a presentment coming from we the people, the grand jury. And it's the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And if you don't know about that, you should learn about that. There is a video we have up there. I do believe we have a video on our front page concerning that. You know, we are made up of people from every state of this union. And every state of this union has brought together the counties and came together and created the Unified State Common Law Grand Jury. New York State, New Jersey State, Washington State, Texas State, Montana State, whatever, any state, all 50 states, Alaska State. And then all of those grand juries came together and formed the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. It took us many years to go through that process. And then we came, our last agreement was to go into the Supreme Court with this and to indict anyone who gets in our way. And then we're going to do that now. Anybody who tries to prevent this case from getting before the Supreme Court, once it gets before the Supreme Court, if I don't know that, and again, that's why we need a lot of people. We need people focusing in on this. We need the administration behind us, and I do believe the administration is and will be behind us. I can't say that I know, but I do believe that that is the case. We've been communicating for quite some time. We've been educating them for quite some time. And again, the book that we sent to them, Government by Consent, it lays everything out in that book, memorandums of law, the problems in the courts, all kind, everything that National Liberty Alliance is about is found in that book. And also how to create a committee of safety. And that's where we the people actually exercise our unalienable right of government by consent. And until people bring together a committee of safety, you are not exercising your unalienable right of government by consent. And if you are not doing it, then you do not have government by consent, nor you cannot possibly have government by consent, and you will lose the Constitution. And that's why we are where we are, because the people fell asleep. Jefferson said to bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And that's what committees of safety do. We teach people how to do that. Okay? Just go up to start a committee of safety. Just click on that right there, and you can follow the breadcrumb trail at that point. It will lead you right through the process and teach you everything. Eventually, you'll get to the page here, Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. And this gives a lot of videos, of instructional videos on how to create each of the different committees required, the subcommittees required in a committee of safety. It gives you a handbook on how to put the whole process together, you know, how to put a committee of safety charter together, how to do the resolutions. Not only do we give video introductions to all these things, but we have a handbooks teaching very detailed on how to do these things. You know, educational committee, a political committee. We even have a book, a very specific book on the political committee on how that process works, how the execution of the elections work, and how to write papers. Take papers to walk people to get them onto the ballot, or to walk. Papers in order to do a recall on an individual who is not obedient to the Constitution. We the people can remove anyone out of office. I think the president is about the only one we can't do, but anyone who was elected, anyone, your congressman, your senator, your governor, your representatives on the states, your mayor, anybody, we the people can remove any one of them at any given time within 90 days. Once we file the papers for a recall. And it's as simple as going out and getting signatures. And once you get a certain amount of signatures, it's laid up, they have a book. The Board of Elections puts out a book during every election cycle. And in that little book, it's sort of a pocket handbook type thing. And in that little booklet, it gives you all the details of how many votes, you know, how many signatures are required to put someone on a particular ballot, or how many signatures are required for recall, what is the percentage. You know, a governor, to recall a governor, is a little more complicated than anything else, because you have to get, I believe it's three-quarters, you have to get signatures in three-quarters of all the counties, and it has to be a certain percentage in each one, and a certain percentage collectively. Okay, that's the only one that's a little complicated. And that requires committees of safeties working together. Each county should have a committee of safety. You know, we have 62 counties here in New York. We need to get 62 committees of safety. If we can get 35 or 40, you know, we're doing real good, okay, because it's enough to take down a governor. Now, we can go to other counties and get signatures. This is a lot more work, traveling and so on. We don't have to have a committee of safety in a certain county to go out and get signatures in a particular county. We could do that in any county we want to walk into. All right, I guess that's pretty much all I wanted to cover. Other than education, again, court access and the common law, you definitely, if you're going into the courts, you're going to want to know this unless you already know how things work. I'm sure you can learn a lot of new stuff with us, too. But we got a lot of information here. So these are the most important links, of course. Education, go in here, you can click on that and just follow the breadcrumb trail. Same thing, we can start a committee of safety, an important one. Here's our federal case. There's a lot of cases we've been involved with, okay? Again, people should be going through this, and especially if you're going into court, you want to read through these cases because you're going to learn how to write a paper. That's how you learn to write. I look at the papers I wrote in the very beginning, and, you know, I thought they were pretty good. From my perspective right now, they're pretty childish in a sense. You know, I was very naive. Didn't make my points, didn't make them clear. And that takes experience. And that experience can be gotten by looking at other people's experiences that they have achieved and what they have written and learn to write like them. Okay, with that, I guess we're going to open up for the Q&A. We only have one person in the queue, but if anybody else wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. And if you're on an Apple browser, there should be a button. Oh, one other thing before we go through this. Let me put this down. Someone sent me an email asking me about the Washington Clause. Okay, and the Washington Clause can be found, let me hold this off and see for a second. Page 290 in the book, Government by Consent. The person who asked the question wanted to know where in the book it was. It's on page 290. But we did get a copy of the election law, 1909, and this is 1909 to 1911 is when they changed the law. The law went from, this is how many pages? This was the law back then. 234 pages was the law here in New York. This is the consolidated laws of the state of New York. After 2009, 2011, it tripled that. And some years later, it tripled that again. It's huge. All the laws that they have, everything that they've written, and they're controlling your life with all these things. Okay, but on page 10 of the consolidated laws, we searched this out. We went up to the archives up in New York and Albany, and we were looking for the old law, and we couldn't find it. And by dumb luck, I guess, someone heard us talking about it to a secretary, I think, with someone at a desk, and trying to get this information. They didn't know anything about anything. And the person who was walking by was working there and says, "Oh, no, we have that. We have that all on microfiche." So we had this copied off of microfiche. We got a copy. And this is New York law, though. But anyway, the question was about the the George Washington Clause, and that was found on page 10 of the Consolidated Laws of New York, and it reads like so. No organization or association of citizens for the election of city officers shall be deemed a political party within the meaning of this article, and membership in any such organization or association shall not prevent a voter from enrolling with and acting as a member of a political party. So the point is, they were not to be organized as political parties. You know, you can come in as a Republican, which is a political party, but you can come in as a Republican or a Democrat or any other political party that they might put together. But they are not to be an association of citizens for the election of the city officers, which includes, of course, all elections within. And that clause was removed. That was gone. In other words, these organizations have become associations, and they run offices, they operate all the time, they have a lot of control, it's political power, political clout. George Washington wrote two-thirds or three-quarters of his farewell address about this problem and said it was going to be the very destruction of the United States of America. Thomas Jefferson said that it would be the judges that would be the destruction of the United States of America. They were both right. Okay, anyway. We'll take our first caller. We've got two people in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, again, it's a *6 and a 1. If you're on a phone or if you're on an Apple browser, should be a button. We'll take our first person. Let's see, next question. Anonymous, what's your first name and your state? You got the mic.
Yeah, hi, John. This is Elizabeth from Arizona.
Yep.
Good evening. I was fishing around on the site and was looking for, there's a set of audios that are common law course related, and I ended up on this grand jury administrator section, and it asked me some questions about my experience, like with speaking, public speaking, and different things, and I put in some things, and then I hit next, and there's this vow that came up, and it's a grand jury administrator vow, or I guess a jurist also. But I had some questions about it, and I asked around a bit, and I got good, seemingly good answers, but nothing that really was definite. But I checked that box like I was signing it, but I shouldn't have, because I'm not clear. And then it put me down as like I'm a grand jury administrator, which I'm not qualified to be one at this point.
Well, maybe not at this point, but you can educate yourself to become one, and we tell you how to do that. What happened when you clicked that box was that it put your name, next to your name, it put you on the list of potential administrators, okay?
Okay. And
that's a full-time job. It's a paid position, and it's a position that you can do in your local county or county next door or whoever you want. For instance, someone may live, let's say you live in one county and you're on the edge somewhere and the court in the county next to you is closer and the court in your county is a little further away and you'd prefer going to a closer place. So you can strike to work in that particular, because you don't have to live in the county that you're working in. What we're doing is trying to take this away from the bar attorneys, because right now the bar attorneys run this whole process. And that's a disaster. That is really a disaster. And you'll never get common law. You'll never get justice. You'll get bar justice, which is, you're guilty or you lose everything, you lose your case, and that's that. So all that information was really talking about the process, and it should have laid out also the education that you need to be taking all of our courses.
Right, it has that there. Yeah, I just wanted to get to this other thing, and I made an error.
I just want to let you know, though, if you want to remove yourself from that, all you need to do is go up. Let me get up to the top of the page here. Okay, you want to go here to My Account, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you fish around in My Account, and you'll find a place where you can uncheck by removing that. And if you really have a problem, you can also let Jan know, and he can remove it from that. But right now, all it is a placeholder. And when we get things going, then we're going to address the people who have signed up for that to see if they're still interested.
Oh, okay.
Courses or in the process of taking the courses, and if they're interested in that job.
Okay, and there are just a couple of terms in the vow that I want to just quickly ask, if I may. The first one, it says that all public servants uphold the U.S. Constitution. Now, mm-hmm. to me, U.S. Constitution is a phrase or a term that describes the maritime constitution, you know, the one. And it should say the United States of the Constitution for the United States of America. That should be spelled out there, because this to me refers back to the one that we're getting rid of, you know. So
I'm
that
not,
there's
not sure I understand which one we're getting rid of.
We have been under the Constitution of U.S. Inc. And
That was not done by a constitution. That was done by the Organic Act of 1871. That's where that comes in. That has nothing to do with a constitution. It just, all it does is created a corporate veil that is laid over our government and has taken control. And President Trump is removing that veil and removing that control. That's why we are in a great position right now to do what we're doing. Now is the time to do what we're doing. And I do believe in my heart at this moment in time that we are going to have a lot of the administration, if not all of it, Trump's administration, behind what we're doing.
Okay.
Because I do believe that they do see, you know, better what you do, if we don't take our courts back, it's only a matter of time before we lose everything anyway. If we don't get justice in court, what good is anything? Our country, our nation, okay, will be as just as its courts are. And the courts are so unjust. That is why we've been destroying the world around us, leading us, the people, we the people, not only here but throughout the whole world, into under the hammer of the New World Order. And the CIA going in there, creating all kinds of problems in the Middle East, creating havoc everywhere they go. They destroyed South America. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Trump is fixing all that. That's what all this is all about. That's what was all about down in South America. That's what it was all about with the canal down there. That's what it was all about in Greenland. That's what it's all about in Iran and in the Straits. This is what it's all about. People don't understand. He's dismantling the whole system. And that's...
Right.
Is what he has to take down before he then takes the inner part of this. Which, by the way, I was going to play a video tonight, and if we run out of people talking, maybe we'll play that video. And it was Tulsi who came on a White House briefing, and she laid out treason in the last administration, or the administration before, shall I say, really. She laid out treason and names. And I can't believe I don't hear anybody talking about it anywhere. Okay? Obama was the main person that she said committed treason and laid out the case. I don't know if anybody else has heard this or seen this. I was blown away. I only seen this about a week ago, if that, maybe not even a week ago, but close to a week, let's say. And I'm wondering if it's an older White House briefing, because I couldn't find a date. But it blew my mind that nobody is talking about this.
So I'm interested in watching that. So the veil that was laid over the original Constitution was the Organic Act?
The Organic Act of 1871, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And all construction of law from that point forward has been in order to incarcerate us in law, ultimately. We're all incarcerated by the law, by the civil law.
Okay, yeah. Okay, and I just one more thing. Also in the vow, it says, and the Bill of Prohibitions with rights in parentheses. And, mm-hmm. I don't understand why they just didn't put Bill of Rights instead of Bill of Prohibitions.
Well, that's what we forbid the people. Forbid them. There's prohibitions, for instance, inside the Constitution itself. But the Bill of Rights is we're laying out things that they're forbidden from touching. That's why some people refer to it as the Bill of Prohibition.
So this is from the outside, not the inside, from the outside. Okay, got it. The prohibitions are from, protections.
Right,
okay.
Right. In other words, don't talk about our rights to have a weapon. Don't come and tell me that we can't have an automatic weapon. Okay. Don't tell me that, I don't have the right to talk and say anything I want. I mean, within reason, of course, a good example I've heard since I was a kid, you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater or something like that. That's against the law, obviously.
Right. Also, people can cause harm with words.
Right.
You could
cause harm with words, but you may injure their feelings, but you could do that. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not against the law.
Right. You can tell someone. Slander,
Slanders you, then you can sue them.
And also, there aren't any. What am I trying to think? What's the word? It's when you copy what somebody else has written.
Plagiary.
That's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's another discussion, but...
It depends on how or what you mean by that.
Right.
Doing a work, for instance, writing a book by copying someone else's book, that's plagiarizing. Same thing with paper or something like that. Even if you change it a little here or there. Almost everything I write is quotes, okay?
Yeah.
Of course, I always put footnotes to identify who I'm quoting. And of course, it's a lot of the founding fathers, and of course, the Supreme Court, a lot of Supreme Court rulings, and things of that nature.
Maybe I should do this on another time. But I was looking at the affidavit paper you put up there, and I've been trying to put into words because I have a roof over my head. I'm under this fraud situation, but. My home is taken from me. I mean, and I'm wondering if that would be
a Army, Navy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just looking for that video. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just wondering if that could be under seizure, like in the Fourth Amendment.
Repeat the question again.
I was sold a house fraudulently, and
right.
I moved in here, and maybe this is too abstract. But, they basically seized my home, by misleading me and, that kind of thing, by all the different fraudulent documents and stuff. They basically took my home, took my, my property. I didn't pay for this place. This is not what I paid for, but maybe that's another discussion for another time.
All right. Well, again, the details are important, and fraud is fraud.
Right.
If someone hid something or failed to address something that you should know about a particular purchase of a property and home, and they don't tell you, that's fraud.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that, of course. I'm just trying to look at specifics, because mm-hmm. There's more than one way to take somebody's home. And I'm just looking at that. But thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. All right, we'll take our next caller. And again, nobody else in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, it's *6 and 1 to get into the queue. If you're on a phone, and there should be a button if you're on an Apple browser. And if we run out of people, we'll play this video concerned with what Tulsi had to say. Again, it blew my mind. I can't believe no one's talking about this. I get a lot of people crying and complaining. A lot of people complain, but they don't do nothing. They complain, and they just don't do nothing. And they're complaining about a lot of things they're complaining about. We want to see arrests. How come no one's being arrested? Well, it takes time to build a case and put it together. This is a huge conspiracy. And one thing leads to another, to another, to another, and another person, another person. Another. I mean, it's huge. You have an army of lawyers working on these all of these situations. And so it takes time. But a case was just laid out against Obama and his entire not the entire administration, but the main guts of his administration. These are like five individuals, all talked about and laid out, and has been passed over to the Justice Department now. And she was very clear. You know, it seemed like she really didn't want to say it the way, because he was asked a lot of questions, but she did finally come out and say, treason. These are charges of treason. Not that she believes, you know, it's not that what her position is on this, and that's what she was making the point. She says, I found what I found, and, you know, decision of charges of what needs to be done, that has to be done by the Justice Department. So all that information has gone to the Justice Department, and they're working on it. So you will start to see arrests soon. But it takes time. Okay. Next caller. Let's see. Joe, you got the mic. What's your state? What state are you from, Joe?
Do you hear me?
We can hear you. What state are you from?
Hey, I was once the California lead coordinator.
Okay.
And I kind of got pushed out because I wasn't following the script that you guys put out. And since then,
who pushed you out, and what were you not following?
Well, the concept of the common law being given to us by a constitution.
Nobody. Oh, you believe it was common law was given by the Constitution and not by God Himself, and not by we the people.
Yeah, it's involved, but maybe I should reintroduce what I've assembled in my work, the Zenger case. Are you familiar with the Zenger case?
I've heard of that case, and I probably know a little bit about it, but you'll have to refresh my memory. But that name is very familiar in my mind. But before you talk about that, the question is where do you think common law comes from?
It's DNA.
When you say DNA, I still don't understand.
That's the creator's code, it's the core code, it's humanity.
Okay. Well, in the Declaration of Independence, it's defined as the laws of nature and of nature's God. And by going under that, we ask God for his blessings. And we find right in the preamble to the Constitution, one of the requirements that our government is to adhere to is to protect the blessings of liberty. That's one of 6 points. And anything that they do, they have to uphold at least one of those 6 points and not violate any of them.
Yeah.
So that's the position of what we have, or what the common law is, natural law. Ultimately, it comes from the Bible. The Bible is the key point, that place that we get our law from. God said he wrote his laws in our hearts. So even the non-believer understand, you know, thou shalt not kill, steal, and so on and so forth. You know, you have different groups of people, like the Somalis. It seems like they have no morals at all. There are groups of people that just have no morals. And we see people who just take other people's lives and steal money. And they think, I don't know what it is that they think, but they're just demoral. They're demoralized. They have no morals at all. You know, we're under a moral law. And we know what that law is, okay? Again, you know, it's as simple as injuring another individual. When you injure another individual, you violated the law. Now, injuring their feelings is a different story, you know? To tell someone where to go, or to be in opposition to whatever political or thinking that they have, and, you know, and they get their feelings hurt, well, that's tough. It's called free speech. But go ahead, make your point, Joe, or question.
Yeah, so the Zenger case and the concept of where does the law come from, and it's posse comitatus, that's just a word. It comes from people gathering bottom up and safety committees, and then one of the jobs of the safety committee would be to create a grand jury and have an executive officer such as this sheriff that actually does the boots on the ground work to make sure that the grand jury is assembled. And so what we had in the Zenger case is an example of what we have right now, which is a mixture of two systems. One of the system is based on God's creation and its remedy, and then the other system is based on punishment as a fraudulent solution to the punishment problem. And what has happened, and that's why Zenger case is so important, is the mixture confuses people. So in the Zenger case, like in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which is another case that's very good to look at in context of what we're dealing with, the governor didn't like somebody who spoke out truthfully about the governor, and the governor got part of his faction or party to go ahead and confuse people by saying that the civil law, according to me and my faction, allows me to go ahead and arrest this guy, which is kidnapping. So the Zenger guy, who merely spoke out about the governor's corruption, was kidnapped. The jury ended up setting him free. So it's a very important case, but...
It sounds familiar. What year was this in?
Huh?
What year? Do you know what year that was in?
The Zenger case? It's 1600s, I think. It's America.
1600s?
It might be 16, 17. It's, you can find it.
But you're talking about here in the colonies then, or are you talking about over in Britain?
No, it's here. It's America.
Okay, so it was in the colonies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them colonies, but you can.
Well, the 1600s is before we became states.
Well, I didn't become anything, so...
But I don't think the Zenger case goes back that far. I think it's within... you know, our time period as states. It's a familiar sounding, you know, I've heard the word Zenger, and I'm trying to remember the case because I think I looked into it, but continue.
Okay, so what should have happened and does happen, and if we can find these cases when it does happen, then that would strengthen your case, our case.
We use Supreme Court rulings in order to uphold our thinking and positions. But the key things that the foundation of America, the foundation of our law, is found in the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God to create the United States of America. And we established the law as the laws of nature and of nature's God, right there. And that is what is called common or natural law. And if you go into Black's law or you go into Bouvier's law, you will discover that is exactly what common law is and has nothing to do with civil law. Once you get a statute involved, that violates due process. It's a denial of due process, okay? And civil law comes from Babylonian law. It's the law of the city. It's also referred to as municipality law. And Babylonian law was then repackaged by Justinian, and it was called Justinian law. And then Justinian law was repackaged by Roman law. But it's all the same thing. It's to control the people. It's municipality law. And that is a violation of common law. We are not to, and we never gave, if you go into the Constitution, we gave the authorities to the legislators on what law they can write, and that is under what's called equity. And equity is legislative law, and in our case, because we're a natural law republic, under the natural law, under the common law. As a matter of fact, the rules of common law guided even the civil law, you know, which really wasn't called civil law, it's just legislative law. Legislative law, we gave them the authority, we gave them 18 powers. And that's in Article 1, Section 8, and there's another power in Section 9. And in those powers, 18 powers that we gave them to write law, okay, it was to control commercial activities, interstate commercial activities on a federal level, to control that. So anything that's commercial, that's interstate, they can write law to control it. And we want them to write law to control those things. I mean, Microsoft, for instance, is totally, totally out of control. I've been thinking of doing a case on them if I can find time. And also they can write laws to govern themselves. That's why you have all of these codes, these different codes. One of these codes might be the law that governs the president. Another one might be a law to govern, you know, all of these different agencies, government agencies. Okay, and so they are controlled by statutes and regulations. But you can't control we the people by statutes and regulations. We're under common law, under natural law, under God's law, the law of the heart. And if people make that decision, they come in and they make their decision. Common law is no more difficult to understand than common sense with an eye on justice. That's all it is. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. It's a construction of maxims, truths that cannot be denied. And the jury gets to decide those things. They get to decide the facts. They get to decide the law, and they get to decide the punishment or the consequence, whatever you want to call it. You know, if a person needs to be restored, what will we restore them to? And there are principles that we can find in the Bible on restitution. For instance, if you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four. Okay. What was it? There was a place where an individual. Well, the principle was set up that eight times, if I've ever stolen from anyone, I think it was eight times or seven times, I will replace them seven times. So if you steal $100, you got to give back $700. You know, that kind of thing. And then if there's an injury involved, then there's another situation. But the jury has to decide those things. They use their common sense, discuss it, listen to the evidence, discuss the situation, figure out what needs to be done, and execute it. But, you know, going to jail, putting people in jail, okay, that's not what we need to be doing with most of these cases, okay? You know, the violent cases, yes, you know. You know, they seem to want to put everyone in jail. You know, they have debtors' prisons, okay? The Supreme Court supports debtors' prisons. The federal judiciary supports debtors' prisons. You'll find a courtroom dealing with debtors' prisons in every single federal district courthouse. Every single one of them. It's called the tax court. So, and they put people in jail because they claim that they owe them money. That's a debtors' prison. But anyway, back to you. We do have a few people in the queue now, so. Anything else before we move on, Joe?
No, it sounds like you're not interested in what I have to say, and that
well,
was
I'm
the...
I'm interested. I don't have a disagreement with almost anything you said, and I didn't have anything to do with telling you you can't do anything or trying to shut anybody down. We have shut three groups down. All we've done is eliminated them from our website because they went way out of bounds. I haven't heard anything you said that puts you way out of bounds. So, yeah, I tell you, think about this and come on next week and maybe lay out the points or positions and we could talk some more and we'll find out what happened.
All right, that sounds great.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Walt from New York, you got the mic. Good to see you. How you doing?
Hello, Jan and listeners. You were talking earlier about bar justice.
Yep.
That word is spelled B-A-R. That's bankers and rabbis, the modern Sanhedrins. Those are the ones that hated Jesus, and he said to them, you follow the commandments of men, the tradition of the elders, you don't follow God's law. That's exactly what's happening today, John.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And you know, we got to be careful in what we say there. I mean, Jesus was a rabbi. I guess he was called master, so he was a rabbi. But I understand what you're saying. There is a problem, and it does identify with what happened back in the days of our Lord where they rejected him, and the scribes and the Pharisees and so on, and the lawyers, they all despised Christ and tried to trap him and eventually crucified him.
The difference, though, if you want to say he's a rabbi, Jesus, but he was talking about he follows his father's law. Those
yeah,
rabbis.
Right, well, exactly. The other ones, look, at all they did is rob God. They robbed the churches and they robbed God.
Those are rabbis.
Do what they say. Don't Christ said
John, the rabbis I'm talking about today are friends with the bankers, and they don't follow God's law.
Oh, not at all. No, no, they don't.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. We'll take our next person. Let's see. It looks like Mary. You got the mic. What state you're from? That's what's showing up on your phone, Mary. What state?
This is Mary. Thank you. From Missouri.
Missouri.
I have two quick questions. One, you spoke of how to remove somebody from office in 90 days. And I'm sure you remember when Governor Grusom was recalled and they put forth another election, and then he was reinstated as governor according to their vote. I thought that was all fraud because you have...
What happens on a recall is you have to get a certain percentage of people of signatures, okay? And if you get that certain percentage of signatures, there is a particular form you want to put it out on. Then you bring it to, to the, goodness, what's it called? The Bureau of Elections, okay? And they have a duty then at that point to run a special election. And they have to do it within 90 days. That's the process. So within 90 days, they will get everything together, get the ballots together, and get the information out, and then run another election for recalling, okay?
And if you recall, then
of course you got to convince the people that there's a problem, and you lay the case out on what the recall is about. Why? Because they violated this or violated that. They were disobedient to the Constitution. You know, we have to get, if we can get back to courts of justice, and get proper education into our schools, people will understand more what we're talking about, and they'll see it, okay? Sometimes people don't see it, and they act off their feelings, and their feelings is governed by, you know, their experiences to a major degree. And there are things outside their understanding because they haven't looked at it. They don't know about it. You know, no one has taught them. I remember when I went to want to vote for the first time, I had to go figure out, how to vote, you know, where to go. And you go down to the Board of Election and sign up, or you can get a form. But back in those days, I went down to the Board of Election. But I had to discover, you know, what do you want to be? You want to be, the only two choices they gave me, and I didn't even know there was others, do you want to be a Republican or a Democrat? I didn't know what I wanted to be. So I had to go away and figure that out. And everybody I talked to, nobody seemed to understand, but I did finally realize what a Republican was, and that a Republican is one, ultimately, that is that of the law, the common law in our case. I mean, I didn't understand that back then because I was very young. So then I said, okay, I went back and I wanted to be a Republican. And that's what I signed up for and has been to this day. But, you know, again, they don't tell you any of these things. But back to you.
Okay, so my next question is, through the grapevine, I heard that there was a common law grand jury case that was being tried in, I believe, Mount Vernon, Missouri, if there is a Mount Vernon, Missouri, down in southern near Springfield, Missouri.
What kind of case? Common law what?
A common law grand jury that was being held.
Well, I don't have any knowledge of anybody running a common law grand jury, or what they're doing, or if they understand things, what their position is, what their thinking is, what their education is. I don't know anything about that.
Well, the reason I ask is because they mentioned National Liberty Alliance.
Well, they may have come and gotten educated, and that falls into the criteria of what the earlier caller was talking about. We would separate ourselves from people who were doing things in the wrong fashion. When we put this together, one of the things we realized is that people were ignorant of the law. We were trying to teach people the law. And if you really want to get serious about this, you have to get a proper education. And we give that proper education. But when we set this whole thing up, we made it clear to everybody that the whole focus of what we're doing is to deal with enemies domestic, particularly in the courts, that we wanted to bring our courts back to courts of justice. And that's what we're really all about. And so when we developed a grand jury in a particular state, we didn't develop county grand juries. We developed a state grand juries. And those state grand juries found themselves collectively from the counties, okay, working with all the people in the counties that were conscious of what we were doing and came together to form that grand jury for the sole purpose to pass that power and authority to the unified United States common law grand jury. We have all 50 states that have done that. We have paperwork on that. We have seals for every state of the union. We list them out on every paper we file, okay, that all of these people, and then we give a couple of sentences how they were formed and structured and how they came to be. So we used to have hearings from time to time where we'd come and look for indictments, and we got people coming up and we were doing indictments. The last time we came together, it was agreed upon that we were going to go into the federal courts and file papers to move things back to common law, and also to indict anybody that got into the way of the position of preventing our papers from flowing, which we haven't indicted anyone on that yet, but we do intend on moving down that road on this next paper that we're working on now. Now, again, anybody that wants to be one of the people that bring forth and orientate the jurist, okay, the administrators of the juries, okay, we need 5 people for every county. One of them needs to be have a knowledge of the law. They all should have a knowledge of the law eventually, but one should be a paralegal, okay. The paralegal understands the court structure and different things, so they'd be very helpful. But they have to learn the common law, so they have to take our courses too. And they have to take our court course. They have to take our civics course. They have to take our constitutional course and an administrative course and all of our courses. So they have to take all of our courses. And as long as they're going through that process, then we have people who are educated and able to perform the duties. And we will be writing a handbook for that particular position. But the main position, okay, is for them really is to assist the juries, to bring the juries together, to orientate the juries, whether they be the grand jury or the trial jury, to orientate those juries, to make sure that nobody abuses those juries, like some judge trying to tell them that you get to decide this or that or the other thing, but I'll tell you what the law is. Well, we need to know that, and we will educate them to, you know, report that to us if anything like that happens. But
right.
We do have a handbook for grand juries, which would be the orientation. We have a handbook for trial juries, petit juries, which also would be the orientation for that jury. They would get the copy of those handbooks, but we would have a day to orientate them. So that is the simple part of the process. The hard part of the process is making sure that we're very careful on the jury's decision, okay, and what the will of the jury actually is, and to make sure we get that down right and correctly, okay. And that's where, you know, a paralegal could be somewhat helpful. Juries today, when a grand jury makes an indictment, for instance, in order for that indictment to go through, you know, they put the signature of the foreman, but that paper is worthless unless you get a bar attorney's, which is usually the prosecutor, I presume, to sign it also. Without that signature, the paper is irrelevant and doesn't go anywhere. They won't let the indictment to go through.
Oh, okay. So they might
that's a violation.
Set forth an indictment, but it wasn't right. Okay, so I'll try and find out more.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your help.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next person here is Fareed, it looks like, from California. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
So a question that I have is that if you could please provide for your email address so that I could send you the affidavit.
Oh, well, no, you have to mail it. We gave instructions here. If you go to the front page here, click on our welcome page. I don't know if you're on a phone, so you can't see, but I'll explain. On our front page, it's a little ways down, you'll see it says Grand Jury Presentment to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it tells you, you can click on to watch the video. You haven't done that
yes.
First.
Yes, I have
then
done that.
Then there's the affidavit, which I just updated yesterday, I think it was,
yes.
Or today. I just did this recently. I updated the affidavit because I wasn't clear enough, number one, and people weren't understanding or clear enough of what they needed to do. And so I added, I updated that, and I also added instructions, okay? So you click on the instructions, it'll detail it. What you have to do is follow the instructions, put your affidavit together, and mail us a copy. It doesn't have to be the original. If you want, you can send us the original. I did mention make two copies, but you can get one original and send us a clean copy. And mail it to, we have our address, National Liberty Alliance, 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. So mail it with a donation, which will help to support the case, because it's going to cost us money for filing and different costs to serving and so on.
Mm-hmm. And how much should the donation be?
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I would think maybe, I don't know, $25, $50, if someone $100, whatever people can afford.
Right. You went a bit too fast for the address. Can you point me to the address so I could jot it down or go slowly so I can write it down?
Well, it's right on our front page. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit down. It says Grand Jury Presentment. It's yellow highlighted, so you should see it quite quickly. And it has the address there. It also is on the instructions, and it's also on the affidavit. Now, if you have the old affidavit, information, just download the latest. It's on that. And under that is the instructions. It's on that, too. But I'll read it again. It's you can write NLA or National Alliance,
mm-hmm.
3979 mm-hmm. Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538.
Okay. All right. Thank you
and
so much.
And find that address also on our donation tab for people who want to send money in opposed to doing a credit card or something.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller, and right now it's the last caller, and if we don't have anyone else after this, maybe we'll play that video. We'll see what happens. Okay, John, good to see you. How you doing? John from Michigan. You got the mic, John. John, can you hear us? You got the mic. John, you got your, let me see, make sure the mic is open. Yeah, the mic is open. You got the mic, John. All right, I'll leave you unmuted. And maybe you'll pipe in when you can talk, but I'll take the next caller also. I'll unmute the other person, which looks like... not sure. What's that, LaRonda?
Yes, from Missouri.
From Arizona. How you doing?
No, from Missouri.
Okay, but you have Arizona up here.
Well, I don't know why.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. It looked like Phoenix or something. But, okay, Missouri. How you doing?
Okay. I was calling with a couple of questions in regards to the affidavit.
Yeah.
In the name of the... say the defendants, it was a name and then et al. Because it was three individuals and four companies. Should I just have the name et al. Or list all of the...
No, you can do the et al. Et al. Is fine.
Huh?
Et al. Is fine.
Okay.
It's just identifying your case, because it's not that we're putting your case up here. We're putting an affidavit concerning your case. And once they put the case number, the address, and all that information, and then you have, you know, what the case is, this person against that person, and at alls are fine. Especially when you have more than one or two people, you put at all.
Okay, now, this case has been first filed in the federal courts, but then it was dismissed without prejudice, as I did list a RICO claim and other claims, but it was dismissed without prejudice, and I refiled it in the circuit court. They said it was dismissed because it contained some state claims, and so it's then been in the circuit court several times, and several times in the appeals court, once in the state Supreme Court, whatever, whatever. Am I just supposed to list that case number to the circuit court, or am I needing to list the case numbers to all? I'm confused with that.
Well, yeah, I understand that. Look, I would go back to the original case and list that one, number one, and... But the key thing here is this: it didn't matter what case they had and what they did, you didn't get due process because you were not in a court of law, a court of natural law. You know, you were in a chancery court because it had the civil law in it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't apply to you. Now, you know, again, statutes under equity would apply to those people that are in government agencies. It applies to them. So if you're suing someone, a state, and never sue the state. You want to sue the individual who violated their authority because you don't want to, by suing the state, you're suing yourself. And mm-hmm. Court was even clear on this, that once an individual steps outside of their authority, outside of their jurisdiction, they're on their own, okay, and they could be sued. So you're suing the individual or individuals and not the agency itself, because the agency didn't do no wrong. Even if there was bad statutes or something, they don't apply to you to begin with. But if there was some bad statutes in there that shouldn't be, a jury can, just sign it off. They don't have to acknowledge it as law, okay?
Yeah.
And it's really the legislators, okay? That's what the problem is. We got a lot of bad legislators out there, and they write stupid things that they have no power or authority doing, you know. That's where there is a group out there, they're focusing in on that to deal with all of the unconstitutional legislation, okay? Trying to think of what the name is, the Republic. Terry, do you remember what the name of it is? Would you, trying to think of the name. I know we have a page up on him. But anyway, back to you.
Yeah. And I am going to consider taking on the clerk who refused to take my documents.
Well, they have to be stepping outside of their authority. Okay, remember that. And you want to.
She was.
You have to know why and be very specific on why they rejected it, and that it is, you know, that she was stepping outside of the authority. The only way that they can refuse a paper, and they have to tell you what the problem is if it's not what they consider prima facie. In other words, if there's something on the face of the paper that looks confusing, they can reject it, but they do have to tell you what the problem is so you can fix it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And
I got it recorded. And so, but...
Oh, by the way, the name of that group I was talking about is the Republic Review. Okay? They're working on trying to go and get things going where they revisit the legislation and to get rid of all unlawful legislation. But go ahead, back to you.
Yeah. I don't know if I've called before, probably a couple of years ago in regards to, but this is that case that I said I filed starting back in 2011. And don't you know, everything just ended in January-ish, February this year,
mm-hmm.
and I had listed three individuals. Now, all three are deceased, which the last one passed in December 2025.
Yeah, that's a problem, you know, because you have to find someone to sue, but you can't sue the state.
Yeah, well, I know that, and the judge... I gave them 45 days to find someone, you know, to certify the death and then to step in, and they didn't do it. So now the case is dismissed.
Yeah, well, look, if there were problems with the judges, you know, that's someone that you could sue. If any of those judges in all of those different cases stepped outside of their authority. And remember, we're not talking about rights for any of these people. None of these people have rights to do anything. The only mm-hmm. rights that they have is their unalienable rights outside of their system. But within the system, they only have authorities, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of them even Trump makes that mistake saying, well, I got the right to do that. No, you don't have the right to do anything. You have the authority to do it. And there's mm-hmm. a difference between that. But not that with Trump particularly that it injured anything, but it's just a misunderstanding. I've also heard him or at least people in his administration. I don't know whether I ever heard him say democracy, but I have heard people in his administration say democracy, calling us a democracy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a problem. They need to stop doing that. We're not mm-hmm. a
But every time I demanded a jury trial and they didn't respond, right. And so I made an entry and default judgment, and they didn't honor it. And then months later, they allowed an attorney to come in, make an entry of appearance, and, you know, then it was like they went on. They ignored my demand for jury. There was a lot of discovery issues and everything.
Well, you just found someone to sue. The judge that denied you a jury trial.
Mm-hmm.
That's a violation. So you got someone to sue.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, that was it for my questions, and I'll work on getting that affidavit done.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, that's pretty much it with people in the queue. So I'll play this video that I was talking about. We've got about 12 minutes left. I don't recall how long this is, and I don't know how much time we'll have, but I'll play the video anyway, and we could talk about this next week if people are interested. But I am just kind of beside myself on why this has not hit everywhere. Okay, here we go.
Air Force and Space Force have all reached their recruitment goals.
Hold on. I got to go back further.
Manufactured findings from shot.
Here it is.
Time. The intel community published implausible intelligence suggesting otherwise. Why? To sabotage the incoming president. This is truly one of the greatest political scandals in American history. And reporters at legacy outlets, some of which are sitting in this room today, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, were ridiculously awarded Pulitzer Prizes for their perpetuation of this hoax. It's well past time for those awards to be stripped from the journalists who receive them. It is not journalism to propagate political disinformation in service of the Democrat Party and those in the intelligence community who hand over out of context and fake intelligence to push a false political narrative. I will now pass it over to the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, to speak more about all of this, and then we will open it up for questions afterwards. Tulsi, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. At President Trump's direction and with the support and coordination of the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Rick Crawford, today we've released a declassified oversight majority staff report that was produced in September of 2020. The stunning revelations that we are releasing today should be of concern to every American. This is not about Democrats or Republicans. This has to do with the integrity of our democratic republic and American voters having faith that the votes cast will count. There is irrefutable evidence that detail how President Obama and his national security team directed the creation of an intelligence community assessment that they knew was false. They knew it would promote this contrived narrative that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help President Trump win, selling it to the American people as though it were true. It wasn't. The report that we released today shows in great detail how they carried this out. They manufactured findings from shoddy sources. They suppressed evidence and credible intelligence that disproved their false claims. They disobeyed traditional tradecraft intelligence community standards and withheld the truth from the American people. In doing so, they conspired to subvert the will of the American people who elected Donald Trump in that election in November of 2016. They worked with their partners in the media to promote this lie, ultimately to undermine the legitimacy of President Trump and launching what would be a years-long coup against him and his administration. We're here today because the American people deserve the truth, they deserve accountability, and they deserve justice. The records that we released on Friday that were ODNI records, Senator Chuck Grassley's release on Monday of what is known as the Clinton Annex, which was an appendix to the Department of Justice Office of Inspector General's 2018 report, as well as the House Intelligence Committee's oversight, majority oversight report that we're releasing today, all come back to and confirm the same report. There was a gross politicization and manipulation of intelligence by the Obama administration intended to delegitimize President Trump even before he was inaugurated, ultimately usurping the will of the American people. I'm going to go over the key findings from the House Intelligence Report, which investigated the claims that were made by an intelligence community assessment ordered by President Obama and published in January of 2017. First, Putin's principal interests relating to the 2016 election were to undermine faith in the U.S. democratic process, not show any preference of a certain candidate. In fact, this report shows Putin held back from leaking compromising material on Hillary Clinton prior to the election, instead planning to release it after the election to weaken what Moscow viewed as an inevitable Clinton presidency. In the January 2017 intelligence community assessment that President Obama ordered, John Brennan, who was CIA director at the time, and the intelligence community intentionally suppressed intelligence that showed Putin was saving the most damaging material that he had in his possession about Hillary Clinton until after her potential and likely victory. The report goes into great detail about the information that Russia and Putin had on Hillary Clinton, which included possible criminal acts like secret meetings with multiple named U.S. religious organizations in which State Department officials offered, in exchange for supporting Secretary Clinton's campaign for the presidency, significant increases in financing from the State Department. They also had documents that showed the patronage of the State Department to State Department employees who would go and support Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. There were high-level DNC emails that detailed evidence of Hillary's, quote, psycho-emotional problems, uncontrolled fits of anger, aggression, and cheerfulness, and that then Secretary Clinton was allegedly on a daily regimen of heavy tranquilizers. Then CIA Director Brennan and the intelligence community mischaracterized intelligence and relied on dubious substandard sources to create a contrived false narrative that Putin developed a quote-unquote clear preference for Trump. Brennan and the IC misled lawmakers by referencing the debunked Steele dossier to assess quote-unquote Russia's plans and intentions, falsely suggesting that this dossier had intelligence value when he knew that it was discredited. The intelligence community excluded significant intelligence and ignored or selectively quoted reliable intelligence that contradicted the intelligence community assessment's key findings on Putin's alleged support for Trump, including this intelligence reporting would have exposed the ICA's claim as implausible, if not ridiculous. The intelligence community assessment omitted reliably sourced information, such as how some Russian intelligence officials were quote-unquote planning for candidate Hillary Clinton's victory, while others assessed neither Trump nor Clinton would respect Russia's interests. As was reflected in the ODNI documents that we released on Friday, multiple intelligence community assessments released in the months leading up to the November 2016 election concluded that Russia had neither the intent nor capability to impact the outcome of the U.S. election. On December 5th of 2016, the FBI and ODNI gave the House Intelligence Committee its first post-election classified briefing, in which there was no mention of Putin aspiring to elect Trump by either agency. The Presidential Daily Brief, drafted on December 8th of 2016, stated that no Russian or criminal actors impacted vote counts. This document was pulled just hours before it was to be published due to quote-unquote new guidance. If it had been published, it would have been briefed to both President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump. On December 9th, 2016, a National Security Council meeting was called to gather President Obama's senior national security officials, which included CIA Director Brennan, then Obama DNI James Clapper, Susan Rice, and others. Following that secret meeting, DNI Clapper's assistant sent an email to the intelligence community with the subject line, POTUS tasking on Russia election meddling, tasking ODNI leaders to create a new assessment per the president's request. The House Intelligence Committee oversight report that we released today reveals that, quote, unlike routine intelligence community analysis, the intelligence community assessment was a high-profile product ordered by the president. President Obama. It directed senior intelligence community agency heads and created an intelligence community assessment limited to just 5 analysts using 1 principal drafter. This is not something that occurs in the normal path of producing an intelligence community assessment that reflects the views across the intelligence community. The production of this intelligence community assessment was subject to unusual directives directly from the president and senior political appointees, especially the former director of the CIA, John Brennan. The House Intelligence Committee oversight report also shows how later that same day, on December 9th, Brennan ordered the publication of quote-unquote substandard reporting on Russian activities, which had previously been withheld from publication of prior assessments because the information was judged, quote, to have not met longstanding publication standards. Some of the information later used in the Obama-ordered assessment over the objections of veteran CIA officers was, quote-unquote, unclear or from unknown sources. The Intelligence Committee's oversight report reveals that CIA Director Brennan overruled senior CIA officers who challenged the Obama-ordered intelligence assessment, stating, quote, we don't have direct information that Putin wanted to get Trump elected. Yet, the Obama-directed assessment was published on January 6, 2017, which explicitly stated, quote, we assess Putin and the Russian government aspired to help President-elect Trump's election chances, when possible, by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him, end of quote. The CIA and FBI, then led by John Brennan and James Comey, expressed high confidence in this judgment, while the NSA expressed moderate confidence. Yet, as the report we released today shows, the ICA, the Intelligence Community Assessment, did not cite any report where Putin indicated helping Trump win was an objective. The opposite is true. With regards to the Steele dossier, we now know that one of the source documents that the Obama administration used in the creation of this intelligence assessment in January of 2017 was none other than the discredited, unverified Steele dossier. The House Intel report states, quote, contradicting public claims by then CIA Director Brennan that the dossier was not in any way incorporated into this intelligence assessment, the dossier was referenced in the intelligence assessment's main body text and further detailed in a 2-page assessment annex. John Brennan lied, and he denied using this dossier in this intelligence assessment that President Obama ordered because he knew it was discredited. It was a politically motivated, manufactured document. He directed senior CIA officials to use it anyway. CIA officer told the House Intelligence Committee staff as they investigated this, quote, the director of the CIA, John Brennan, refused to remove it. And when confronted with the dossier's many flaws, responded, quote, yes, but doesn't it ring true? Even the bipartisan Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report published in 2020 criticized the FBI's handling of the Steele dossier, noting its completely unverified nature and purposeful sidestepping of intelligence community procedures in its use. Now, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Brennan, James Clapper, James Comey, and others, including their mouthpieces in the media, knowingly lied as they repeated the contrived narrative that was created in this January 2017 intelligence community assessment with high confidence as though it were fact. John Brennan, as CIA director, stated in a memo to his agency staff in December of 2016, saying, quote, there is strong consensus among us on the scope, nature, and intent of Russian interference in our presidential election. This was reported by NBC News, confirming that Brennan, along with James Clapper and James Comey, agreed with the CIA's assessment that Russia intervened to help Trump win the presidency. As Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper was tasked with overseeing the creation of this assessment in January of 2017 by President Obama, and he expressed confidence in its findings. In a 2018 interview with the Harvard Gazette, he talked about how he provided Trump with the same classified assessment that President Obama received, which included the high confidence judgment that Putin directly ordered the hacking and election interference. Clapper then went on to add, I think they, the Russians, actually influenced the outcome. This is a brief summary of the details that you'll find within the House Majority Staff's report in their investigation into the Obama-directed January 2017 intelligence community assessment that leads us to the very same conclusion that we announced in the release of our documents on Friday. The implications of this are far-reaching and have to do with the integrity of our democratic republic. It has to do with an outgoing president taking action to manufacture intelligence, to undermine and usurp the will of the American people in that election, and launch what would be a years-long coup against the incoming president of the United States, Donald Trump. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tulsi. And we do want to take questions on this topic while the director has time for this topic. She will leave. I'm happy to take questions on other matters after that. But if anyone has questions for Director Gabbard, you're welcome to ask them. We'll start with our new media seat as always. Emily, go ahead.
Thank you. And Director Gabbard, this one is for you. Do you believe that any of this new information implicates former President Obama in criminal behavior?
We have referred and will continue to refer all of these documents to the Department of Justice and the FBI to investigate the criminal implications of this.
For even
the evidence, correct. The evidence that we have found and that we have released directly point to President Obama leading the manufacturing of this intelligence assessment. There are multiple pieces of evidence and intelligence that confirm that fact.
Ed, go ahead.
Director Gabbard, thank you. So just two questions to begin on that. The president yesterday, you've inferred that the former president helped lead a coup. Based on what you now see, do you believe President Obama is guilty of treason?
I'm leaving the criminal charges to the Department of Justice. I'm not an attorney, but as I've said previously, when you look at the intent behind creating a fake manufactured intelligence document that directly contradicts multiple assessments that were created by the intelligence community, the expressed intent and what followed afterward can only be described as a years-long coup and a treasonous conspiracy against the American people, our republic, and an attempt to undermine President Trump's administration.
The Senate Intelligence Committee spent several years looking into this and unanimously agreed in a bipartisan fashion. Secretary of State Rubio was a member of that committee, that there was no political interference. There was a years-long Justice Department investigation into this as well that also concluded no political interference. So help us, from a 50,000-foot level, explain, what do you now have that refutes those two concerns?
Sure. I will encourage you, in my role as the Director of National Intelligence, my job, again, as I said when I came into this role, was to make sure that we are telling the truth to the American people, and that we are ensuring that the intelligence community is not being politicized. So I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I'm asking you and the media to conduct honest journalism and the American people to see for yourself in the documents that we've released now, close to 200 pages that point in multiple references, multiple examples, to include comments that have been made by senior intelligence professionals who are some still working within these agencies today, that confirm the conclusions that we have drawn, that President Obama directed an intelligence community assessment to be created to further this contrived false narrative that ultimately led to a years-long coup to try to undermine President Trump's presidency.
And it's your belief that those two previous investigations missed that or covered it up?
I'm telling you to look at the evidence. Look at the evidence, and you will know the truth.
John.
Thanks, Caroline. Thanks, Director Gabbard. You declassified these documents, if I'm not mistaken, Friday of last week, correct?
We released them on Friday of last week, the first tranche, yes.
This isn't the first time that President Trump has been president of the United States. He was president from 2017 to 2021. Couldn't the prior DNI under President Trump have declassified these documents? And why didn't that DNI do that at that time?
I can't speak to what happened there. There were several DNIs under the first Trump administration. President Trump faced many challenges from those who were working in the government who sought to undermine his presidency. That's been clearly detailed. What I can speak to is the fact that this was one of the first things that we started to investigate here within this Trump administration and have released the results upon the conclusion of our investigation.
has to do with what intelligence agencies around the world have said about Russia, that they have tried to influence elections in the United States, in France, in Germany, in the UK. Do you disagree with that? Do you believe that Russia is a bad actor as it relates to trying to influence elections?
I'll point back to the intelligence that President Trump has ordered declassified, that we have declassified and released, that the intelligence reflects Russia's motives were to try to sow discord and chaos within the U.S. election, which is a clear distinction from showing a preference for or against a specific candidate, which is what the Obama manufactured intelligence document alleges, that Russia preferred Donald Trump and tried to help Donald Trump get elected. Again, going back to the most important point here, with the intent to undermine the legitimacy of President Trump's election and therefore subvert the will of the American people who chose to send him to the White House.
Reagan. Director Gabbard, Reagan Reese with the Daily Caller. You laid out that the documents revealed that the Obama administration did not publish a December 2016 presidential daily briefing that demonstrated that Russia did not steal the election. Trump was receiving these briefings at the time because he was president-elect. Are you of the view that that information was kept out of the briefing because then president-elect Donald Trump would have seen it?
I don't have any documents that speak to exactly what the new guidance was that was given as the reason for pulling that document, which, by the way, still has never been published until we released it last week, Friday. One could assume that they didn't want President Trump to see a document that came from the intelligence community that would contradict the Russia hoax narrative that began through the Hillary Clinton campaign with the Steele dossier.
Maybe either for you or Caroline, the president said yesterday that Obama committed treason. Do you or the White House believe that the Supreme Court's immunity decision protects Obama from prosecution?
Look, I can speak to the president's feelings on this matter. He spoke to all of you yesterday in the Oval Office, but I also spoke to him about this morning. And he wants to see all those who perpetuated this fraud against our country, who betrayed our country and the Constitution, to be thoroughly investigated and held accountable. And it's been 10 years of this. And I would just add, based on everything the director has said and declassified, all of you in this room should go through it and take a look at this report and review the intelligence, because unfortunately that hasn't happened. And many of the people who perpetuated this hoax, Clapper, Andy McCabe, James Comey, and many others, have been hired by major networks in this room to go on television and continue to spew these lies, knowing that they are lies. And if you all recall, just flashback to 2016 and the years after, the entire Trump 1 presidency was embroiled in this scandal that was perpetuated by the Democrat Party. And you had major Democrat Party officials in this city, namely Adam Schiff, Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren, who went on television and told the American people, Donald Trump is an asset of Russia. It was a lie. They always knew it. Hillary Clinton herself said that President Trump would be a puppet for Putin. Senator Tim Kaine at the time called President Trump Vladimir Putin's defense lawyer. Adam Schiff stated, and one of the worst things a lawmaker can do is to tell the American people, I know something you don't know, it's just classified and I can't tell you. And that's what he said. I can tell you that the case is more than that. I can't go into the particulars, but there is more than circumstantial evidence now. And not enough people in this room, not enough journalists in this country pushed Adam Schiff to say, what are you talking about? What evidence do you have? Everybody just ran with the lies, and it led to impeachments. It led to the division of our country. Unfortunately, so many Americans, from listening to outlets in this room, believed in these lies. And it's a complete scam, and it's a scandal, and the president wants to see accountability for that. Phil.
Thank you. A question for Director Gabbard. A spokesperson for former President Obama said in a statement earlier this week, quote, nothing in the documents issued last week undercuts the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 election but did not successfully manipulate any votes. How do you respond to critics like former President Obama and also others on the Hill who say that the administration is conflating apples and oranges here, conflating allegations of actual hacking of voter machines and allegations of interference generally?
I think it's a disservice to the American people that former President Obama's office and others who are criticizing the transparency that is being delivered by releasing these documents. They are doing a disservice to the American people and trying to deflect away from their culpability in what is a historic scandal and negative action towards the American people and our Democratic Republic. The answer to that statement can very clearly be found throughout all of the documents that we have released. Again, showing that Russia has took action to try to sow discord in the election, but showed no preference for or against any singular candidate.
You've long been an opponent of weaponization in government. How do you respond to criticism that referring Obama administration officials and even potentially the former president is just more weaponization, and this is a potential race to the bottom?
I think that's a very disrespectful attack on the American people who deserve the truth. They deserve to have faith and trust in the integrity of our Democratic Republic, which has been undermined by President Obama through his direction of this manufactured fake intelligence document, knowing that it was filled with lies and knowing that it would and could then be used for all of the actions that came after.
And I would just add, there needs to be accountability for that weaponization, Phil, that we've seen. And no one has been a victim of the weaponized government more than President Trump, not just because of this political scandal. You all recall his house was raided. So I think, you know, it's very disingenuous for people to say, how dare they speak of former President Obama about this based on evidence and based on intelligence, when the former president of the United States, Donald Trump's home was raided, when he was forced to sit in a Manhattan courtroom and many other courtrooms across the country for crimes he never committed, when he was impeached and indicted, and the entire country witnessed that. That's the weaponization of justice. Now the president is back because the American people see the truth. Nearly 80 million Americans reelected him back to this office, and he believes that we need to have justice and accountability, and I think the nearly 80 million Americans who reelected him agree with that. Caitlin.
Thank you, Caroline. Two questions for Director Gabbard just on this. Director Gabbard, you referenced the past intelligence reports and assessments on this, including that 2017 one that was signed off, as Ed noted, by every Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, including the acting chair of the time, now Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who said in a statement that they did not find any evidence of Russian collusion, but they did find, however, is very troubling, and they found irrefutable evidence of Russian meddling. One, are you saying that he's wrong in that statement that he made then? And secondly, what would you say to people who believe that you're only releasing these documents now to improve your standing with the president after he said that your intelligence assessments were wrong?
Well, first, I want to correct something that you stated, which was citing the Senate Intelligence Committee's report as being one and the same. I think you said the intelligence community. The Senate Intelligence Committee has a very different function than the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The evidence and the intelligence that has been declassified and released is irrefutable. I'm going to let Caroline speak to Secretary Rubio.
I'll speak to both questions. First, on Secretary Rubio, he put out a statement in 2020 following that Senate Intelligence Committee report, and he said what they found is troubling. We found irrefutable evidence of Russian meddling, which the Director of National Intelligence just confirmed for all of you that Russia was trying to sow distrust and chaos. But what's the outrage in this that Secretary Rubio did not say at the time, the Democrats were saying at the time, is the fact that the intelligence community was concocting this narrative that the president colluded with the Russians, that the president's son was holding secret meetings with the Russians, all of these lies that were never true. And he also said at that time, we discovered deeply troubling actions taken by the FBI under Comey, particularly their acceptance and willingness to rely on the Steele dossier without verifying its methodology or sourcing. The Steele dossier that many outlets in this room ran as the gospel truth, and it was cooked up and paid for by the Clinton campaign. As for your second question, Caitlin, I think who is saying that she would release this to try to boost her standing with the president? Who has said that?
Well, the president has publicly undermined her when it came to Iran. He said she was wrong. He told me that she didn't know what she was talking about. That was on Air Force One on camera.
The only people who are suggesting that the Director of National Intelligence would release evidence to try to boost her standing with the president are the people in this room who constantly try to sow distrust and chaos amongst the president's cabinet. And it is not working. I will just answer your question directly. I am with the president of United States. States every day. He has the utmost confidence in Director Gabbard. He always has. He continues to. And that is true of his entire cabinet, who is all working as one team to deliver on the promises this president made. Does anyone else have questions for Director Gabbard? And then we'll turn it over to a couple other questions. Christian, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Director Gabbard. Two follow-ups on questions that have been asked. You mentioned the previous DNIs during the president's first term. One of them reports to you right now, if I'm not mistaken, John Ratcliffe. So have you not spoken to him about why this information was not declassified during the first term?
He was in that position for a very short period of time. The work that began back then, we have picked up and absolutely completed. We are continuing to investigate this. Additional whistleblowers are now coming forward because they see an opportunity for the truth to come to light. And as Caroline said, for real accountability to be brought forward. The accountability is the essential part of this. We can show the truth, reveal the truth. The accountability needs to occur to be able to start to restore that trust in the integrity of our democracy.
And then just quickly, I know you said you feed the charging to DOJ, but the statute of limitations on conspiracy is 5 years. So what else could they possibly pursue besides treason?
I think that's a great question for Attorney General Pam Bondi. We are providing all of the evidence, all of the intelligence that we have, both redacted and unredacted versions, referring it to the Department of Justice and the FBI.
We'll take one more. Charlie, go ahead.
How credible was the information about Hillary Clinton's health? The report said that it was sourced from the DNC. Have you seen that information, do you think that maybe Russia was overemphasizing what they had?
All I have seen is what the intelligence committee have reported through their investigation. I think the underlying point there is that we understand from intelligence what Russia said that they had. And the important point here is that if they were trying to influence the election, as President Obama and James Clapper and John Brennan, everybody said they were doing in order to support Donald Trump's election, they would have released the most damning of that information, some of which I detailed here. You'll find the rest in the report, prior to the election to help Donald Trump win. They specifically withheld what they had on her, the most damning information, because they thought that she would win the election. They had plans to release it just prior to her inauguration to, again, sow discord and chaos in America.
And if I may, on Jeffrey Epstein, can you rule out that he was connected in some way to any kind of intelligence, either foreign or domestic?
I haven't seen any evidence or information that reflects that. If anything comes before me that changes that in any way, support the president's statement loud and clear. If any credible evidence comes forward, he wants the American people to see it.
Great. Director Gabbard, we thank you for
your
time today. I know you're a busy woman, we'll let you get out of here, but thank you so much. Okay.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our program tonight. Maybe next week, next Monday night, people are interested. Maybe we could talk more about this, but I'm surprised people aren't talking about this. But anyway, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.